Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the January 28 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Philip Shaw from Under the Agrodome, Dresden, Ontario, Canada, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities, let's start with you. What's your list of items to talk about today?
Well, I think we've had a pretty significant rally from the crop report. As we look at this week, it may have run out of some steam as we look at Chinese cancellations, probably a pretty significant factor. We've also had some weather issues in South America that may have been factored in. So I think as I look at this week, maybe we've put a high end for a while, and now we may have to be concerned about drifting backwards as we go forward into next week.
Pete Manhart?
Well, those two things, I think the South American one is, it's still a giant crop. It's just, it's dry here, it's wet there, it's whatever, but it's still a giant crop. And then, of course, the Chinese thing. And I think those were the two big things. I think part of the move up was they're worried about dryness in South America, and they continue, other people saying, yeah, it's still going to be a big crop.
And finally, some items from you, Phil Shaw.
Two gentlemen talked about some things that are very relevant to our pricing. I would like to add a little bit about the foreign exchange and how that affects planting decisions in places like Brazil and Argentina, but as well as an example from Ontario, Canada, where I'm from, where the planting decisions in local currencies look much different than what you have in the United States.
I'd like to start there, actually, Philip, with you, because if some people aren't actually familiar with you, they can read your column Under the Agrodome on DTN. They can also follow you at Agrodome on Twitter, which is where I see you more often than not. Tell me a little bit more about yourself. You are a farmer there in Dresden. Where is that, and how much do you farm? What kind of crops, and how are the decisions different for you?
I farm in near Dresden, Ontario. I'm 57 years old. I farm 865 acres here by myself in the Dresden, Ontario area. Corn, wheat, and soybeans. I have grown a little bit of sweet corn in the past. In Ontario, I write Market Trends commodity commentary for the Grain Farmers of Ontario, and I do speak across Canada on agricultural commodities. Also write for DTN. I've done that for over 20 years across the United States and Canada, and I write for several other publications across Canada as well. But I mainly farm, and of course I have to follow markets all the time because I write mainly about markets now. It never always was that way. And I write the commodity commentary for the grain farmers here in Ontario. So I do a lot of that.
Tell me about the foreign exchange rates. Yours is certainly different than what we're experiencing here in the United States.
Well, you know, I think that's significant with regard to prices and with regard to the American farmer, because you've got some quite low futures prices compared to the last 5 years in the United States. But of course, for instance, that's priced in U.S. dollars. You take me, for instance, I farm in southwestern Ontario, and what I get for my crops is Canadian dollars. So with the exchange rate, right now I have about a positive $3 basis on top of the closing price for March soybean futures now, plus $3. So that puts my cash price very close to $12 Canadian. So the optics, and it's similar for corn. So the optics for me as a Canadian farmer is that the cash prices that I'm receiving for my grain is actually higher than last year. And in fact, it is approaching the year before. And so when it comes to planting decisions this year, you know, we're all into planting because our cash prices are higher. And it's simply a foreign exchange play because the U.S. dollar has risen so greatly over a period of time that currency like Canada hasn't been able to keep up with it, and our dollar has fallen. Similarly, if you go to places like Brazil and Argentina, where you've had the Brazilian real go down significantly, and the Argentinian peso the same way, in those currencies, cash prices are higher than they've received in years past, especially last year. So the pedal is to the metal for planting down there and production. And, of course, we're waiting for the rationing to take place in the United States, if it ever does, with your low prices at some point. Maybe there'll be some type of reaction to that. But so far, from what I've heard in the United States, everybody's going to plant as much as they can. But that's how it affects me. And that's how, you know, have a similar effect the foreign exchange does around the world and other currencies. And it gives different planting signals, and the price optics are quite different from what you would find in some places in the American Corn Belt.
And in this case, you're defining rationing as in rationing land or setting aside properties and not putting it into corn or soybeans or wheat or one of those crops. Can I ask you one other question? Because you're $3 over on soybeans, and your corn price, I assume, is good as well. Are your input prices higher, or are you looking at more profitable levels than you did in the previous years?
Well, to answer that question, the input levels would be higher, all depending on foreign exchange. As you know, fertilizer prices have been dropping in the United States, and so we will get the same drop. But when you convert that to Canadian currency, you know, it may be more than we are used to, or it may not be, depending on how much the raw product drops, because that's priced in U.S. dollars, which is the world's default currency. You know, we got a plus $1.15 on March futures on corn now. For new crop, it's a dollar over as well, almost $5 a bushel for corn. So inputs, whether it's fuel, whether it's fertilizer, you know, it's all based in U.S. prices, but it's converted into Canadian currency. And so it would be higher in you know, the amounts compared to me just telling you what it is Canadian dollars versus U.S. dollars. But I really don't know at this time.
And finally, because you produce in the shadow of the United States, for corn in particular, as does everybody around the planet, do you switch crops often based on what's happening in the U.S.? And when I say switch crops, do you have very many crops that you can actually raise where you are? So I know corn and soybeans work. Probably spring wheat would work too.
Well, they grow mostly. They only have 75,000 acres of spring wheat in Ontario. Most of that, of course, is grown in Western Canada, the great expanses of Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Alberta. Here in the tip of deep southwestern Ontario, I'm on the same latitude as Detroit, Michigan. So we grow corn, wheat, and soybeans. We also grow seed corn in this area, processing tomatoes, and sugar beets, which are all shipped to Michigan and get to take advantage of the U.S. sugar policy. So, you know, basically, because our currency is at such an advantage and you are our greatest trading partner, it represents quite an opportunity for us here in Canada right now. And, of course, we ship corn into the United States at certain times of year. That's like importing snow to Canada in January. But, in fact, we do that here in Ontario from time to time, and we may be doing it this year. For instance, Michigan ethanol plants are full of Canadian corn now right up until May. So that's how that will work.
Chuck or Pete, and I'll start with Chuck, do either of you have a question that you want to ask Phil off the top of your head?
Well, bushel per acre, what kind of crop are you talking you can grow? And then gross dollars versus gross expense, what are you looking at?
Well, the average yield for corn this year in Ontario was 178 bushels per acre.
Okay,
now that's on about 2.05 million acres. And that stretches from a geographic area of Detroit, Michigan, all the way to the Quebec border at Montreal. And, you know, I talk about in Canadian dollars, but if you take land out of the equation, you know, depending on how you price things, I would say about $600 an acre for cash costs on that in Canadian money. And if you multiply, you know, it depends on your yield, but, you know, on my farm, I got way over 200 bushel an acre this year. If you multiply that by five, that's $1,000 gross per acre. That is more than last year. And in fact, it's coming close to more than the year before. It's all a foreign exchange play. That's my situation here in Canada. And of course, they have the similar type of things in Brazil and Argentina and other places.
So the profit margins are rather good right now.
It is, yes. In fact, it's better than last year. But it's all foreign exchange play. And so if you could change my name to a Spanish name or a Portuguese name and go down to Brazil and Argentina and places like that, it would be similar. We would get more Argentinian pesos and more Brazilian reals for our crops, and therefore the profit margin is looking a little bit better. So, for instance, the American farmer, I've got many American friends, and I write to a lot of Americans. We look at you completely differently because your profit picture is much different. Your productivity is crazy good, but nobody likes these futures prices and nobody likes these lower basis levels, especially in the Western Corn Belt. I know with Todd, I do a lot of basis maps and I publish them on Twitter and people kind of like them, but I can see the very low basis values you have out in the Northwestern Corn Belt in the Dakotas. It's hard to believe you can grow corn for those basis levels these days.
Philip, I was just wondering, you know, with the advantage you have up there, it looks like you're going to have full speed planting ahead, and it's going to make it tough for the American farmers. Which crop do you favor up in Canada as far as where prices are now?
Well, keep in mind that I'm in Ontario, so we only have 2 million acres of corn, and that's a far cry from what our American friends have, but it's corn. You know, the productivity levels are so high, not only in Ontario, but of course in the United States versus soybeans, which we have a little bit more trouble with, that I expect there'll be more corn in Ontario this year. In Western Canada, if you're thinking about that, you know, they've had a tremendous increase in soybean production in Western Canada over the last few years, but of course grow a lot of canola, wheat, and lentils and things of that nature. But specifically in Ontario and Quebec, it's going to favor corn just because of the productivity levels that we're getting. Like we had 178 bushels per acre last year in Ontario, and the year before we had 170. And, you know, on my farm, I had over 200. Now, I don't have 270 or like they have in Illinois, but, you know, that's pretty good. But I expect at these levels, which is $5 new crop corn, that there'll be more corn grown and there won't be the cutbacks that you may have at a certain point in some places in the United States.
Yeah, so for those of you who are listening, Philip Shaw writes Under the Agridome. You can find it on DTN. You can find him if you follow him on Twitter at his handle, at Agridome. He mentioned that he produces maps from time to time that come from DTN that he annotates that have basis levels on them. And they show sometimes how you're able to move grain from one side of the Corn Belt to the other. That's what happened this past week. And, Chuck, I want to ask you about basis levels in your area there near West Lafayette, Indiana, and Purdue University. They've been really good because you've been in one of those places that's been in need of both corn and soybeans, lower production last year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's the good that goes along with the bad of having one of the poorer crops in parts of Indiana and eastern Illinois. It does help out some, Todd, when you look at the lower yields we had. I think that's something that can continue as we look into the 2016 crop in our area, too. We're going to be corn deficit, and as we go forward, we're going to have to pull corn from the west to meet our needs, but I think we'll have some early harvest premiums available for for farmers here in parts of the eastern Corn Belt.
Have you seen and been able to identify corn that's been able to move from Illinois or more likely Iowa, the Dakotas, into your area to fulfill needs?
I don't think that's happening yet. I think there's still enough corn in our area to meet those needs. I think the real squeeze will come down the road. I think what they're trying to do is buy corn from eastern Corn Belt farmers before we go and get to planting. It's kind of a typical year we don't want to ship anyway. So I think at that point is when they'll try to pull in trains from the west and meet those planting time through early summer needs, and then they'll go back and see how much corn's left for farmers here in the eastern Corn Belt that they didn't get sold before we go plant corn again.
Hey, Pete Manhart, on these basis moves, much has been talked about by many of the analysts that are on the air about locking in basis and then being able to price later on a futures contract. What difference does that make in the cash market from your opinion and what potentially happened this week and today in Chicago on this Thursday when the market really dropped in particular for soybeans?
I was told by an elevator man one time that all basis contracts do is make farmers do something, and it's great for the elevator. That's what I was told by an elevator man. If you got basis at 21 over, like I've got people near Decatur, they're selling cash today, and they will maybe buy it back on the board. They might not, but they're 21 over, and they're willing to take, that was this morning when they had 370, they were willing to take 391 to get rid of 25 to 50,000 of the cash that they didn't sell over $4. And with the amount of corn around the world and coming out of South America, that's what they're looking at, where the basis is really good. It's the time of year from now until we're planting. We have to decide, are we gonna sell some, or are we going to go through days like today where, yeah, the basis is good, but my flat price just went down.
All right. So back to you, Philip Shaw. You put these basis maps together that are coordinated out of the DTN's database. This week, you just showed in the basis map what you think probably is happening, and we can confirm certainly the train loads are coming in to Decatur, Illinois, and other places. But how easy is that to manage, in your opinion?
I think it's, well, from my perspective, it's incredibly difficult because I have to do it in a different currency, and Canadian basis is just so different because it's in a different currency. But I have found that I call it the Indiana basis anomaly. And, you know, maybe Chuck could talk a little bit more about that, but because you had all that rain in the spring and you got a lot of ethanol plants around there. If you look at a basis map, my goodness, you got this place in Indiana that has this, it's kind of an island of good basis values. And I assumed that all the corn would be coming in there. And you answered the question because you said there might be some early harvest premiums coming up. You know, it's interesting because some Michigan corn has come down, and that has enabled Ontario corn to fill some of the plants in Michigan. From a Canadian farmer's perspective, basis is all about the Canadian dollar value, and it's very important for us to manage basis. Similarly, in the United States, I know guys on Twitter, they talk to me about this Indiana basis anomaly with it going up, like it being an island among lower basis values. And it's another level of crop management that farmers have to deal with. And I know it's different between me and you. But that Indiana map where we see that island of increased basis values is just kind of a laboratory of what marketing, I call it market structure. You can see the different market structure around the country. That's there because of the poor crops you had compared to normal. And then you can go west of there and see the much, much lower basis values. The reason they're lower is because you had such tremendous crops out there and you're dealing with the surplus. But I think a good understanding of basis, which is just the value which determines when grain is moved, is really, really something that farmers need to have a good understanding of. And I've worked all my life and I'm still trying to understand it. But that's what I'd like to say.
One of the other things that farmers probably should understand, and Pete Manhart and Chuck, and I'm sure, Philip, you do too, monitor the technical side. I believe that the moving averages all converged, and it was kind of a rough day in Chicago, closing some of the futures contracts below the moving averages. Pete, how bad was Thursday for the marketplace, do you think?
Well, I mean, it went under those moving averages, and I think that's a technical sign that this 30, 35 cents we made in the last month could easily go right back down to those old lows now. We'd been holding above it. We'd been sideways to higher. We might be looking now at sideways to lower.
And Chuck, your view of the technical side of the marketplace?
Well, it's pretty much we've been in a downtrending channel, and we probed the upside of the channel, and we've failed every time we've poked our head above there. And when we look back again at my opening comments on the reasons why we got here, I think we've kind of completely run out of steam, and I would expect, unfortunately, us to drift lower as we move into the next week or two. And again, basis management, if you're in Eastern Corn Belt, I would think they're going to have to perk up the basis if they want to buy any corn. Farmers have hesitated to sell on a declining market, so I think basis will probably strengthen here in the East as we move into the coming weeks.
But will that be on a lower price?
Yeah, a lower price, yeah, lower futures price. And back to your comment on the farmers that are using basis contracts, I mean, they have to recognize and have a game plan and understand the upper end of the channel. If you're going to take a positive, 20-cent, 30-cent basis and do a basis contract, you need to have points in the futures market, orders to sell in there, take advantage of that to put the two together to make that come out ahead. Otherwise, you can go backwards, as Pete alluded to. That's the risk we have of anybody who set a basis and hasn't set their futures yet.
How important, Chuck, do you think the Chinese cancellations of soybeans on Thursday morning were to the marketplace?
Well, I consider that kind of a game changer here. The South American crop in Brazil was particularly late planted. I think that's got us some additional orders from China because the harvest is slower than normal down there, but it is going to get going. The Chinese have helped bring the bean market up in the recent weeks. And now with them canceling, you have to be concerned they're going to cancel more as we go forward because it is a big crop any way you cut it. And with the currencies, they can buy them cheaper there. I think it's a natural progression, and I think it's certainly technically a failure in the beans plus a fundamental failure with the Chinese switching their purchases to South America.
Some that we talked to, and Pete, maybe you can take this up, have begun to think that we're in an old seasonal trend potentially where February might be a down month for corn and soybeans, and that would be based on large supplies, producers moving it into the marketplace, whether that be actual cash sales or whether they actually just turned it over under a basis contract. Are you of that opinion?
Yeah, I think that, we spent this last month going up. Now it looks like we've turned, do all these factors we've visited about could easily go right back down near those lows that we had in the last month.
Right, and I'll follow up with you, too, on this one, Pete, and I think you and Chuck are both in agreement, but farmers that have locked in basis or made some kind of contract where they've let go control of their grains or oil seeds, how important is it for them to have a point at which they already have the triggers in place to make the sales?
They need to have those triggers in place. Otherwise, that good basis could easily turn into a less of a flat price if the price goes down 40 cents on the board and I've got a great basis. Doesn't help me much if I didn't, when it was going up, and lose some of that. So get rid of it at that good basis.
Philip, how do you deal with this kind of function in Canada? And I assume it's fairly the same.
Well, yes and no. The difference is that futures values are quoted in U.S. dollars, but cash prices here in Canada are in Canadian dollars. So you have to convert the futures value to Canadian.
And it floats every day. It changes all the time.
It's every day. And sometimes, like for instance, when I was driving the combine last fall, the Canadian dollar was falling like a rock because oil was going down. And my goodness, we went from about, 73 U.S., or 74 U.S. down to 68. And I don't want to delve on this too much because we have an American audience, but I've got a plus $3 basis on soybeans. In fact, it was about 3.25 last week, so I've lost 25 cents on that. And it's simply because the Canadian dollar has rebounded. But yes, typically we are similar to what Pete and Chuck say about the futures and basis play. The only difference is, and it's a big one, is there's another layer of marketing management because we have to watch the foreign exchange fluctuations. You know, as Canadian farmers, that foreign exchange thing we think about every day. And I don't think our American friends think about it as much. But your U.S. dollar has been so strong that all the world's currencies have fallen against it. And, you know, that's going to be very telling in production decisions around the world.
Yeah, the one thing that farmers have been here waiting for, and I think many of our analysts, is for the U.S. dollar to weaken, to put them in a better position in the marketplace. But to have to do a currency conversion would be a very difficult prospect. Let's move to South America very quickly. This is one of the places where we'll be getting pressure in the marketplace, Pete, very soon from their soybean exports to China. That may have been what happened on Thursday with the cancellation out of the United States. How big is their crop, and how much of a weather problem are we hearing that they've had? It's been a little difficult in the last 2 weeks to get a better idea. Started out at 100, went to 102 million metric tons, began to drop back, but just silent for the last couple of weeks.
Well, they've had dry spots, they've had wet spots, they've had poor yields in places, but when you roll it all together, the 97 to 102 is still a huge crop wherever it ends up, and they can sell it to China, or China can buy it, what, beans 40-plus cents cheaper than ours, and they can buy corn 20-plus cents cheaper than ours, and that's where they're going to buy it. And I think Chuck's thing of maybe some more cancellations, if they can buy it a lot cheaper, they will do some more of that.
And Chuck, you want to follow up on this thought?
Yeah, I think we also have to couple in the Argentinian crop and their change in government. You know, they've had some weather issues a little bit in Argentina, but with them changing policy, their new leadership and their new ideas of being more aggressive sellers in the world, and it's probably going to include more acres in Argentina. Again, it just stacks the deck against us, and I think we don't – there's no weather play anymore in South America. Whatever it is, it's big enough to meet the need, and they have the currency advantage. So we, again, got to realize as American farmers we had an opportunity here probably, and it's passed. And going forward, I consider the February break, the old saying, is a distinct possibility as we move into the end of the month.
Chuck, risk management commodities also, along with the brokerage markets, the crop insurance. As you go into the month of February in the United States when they're setting the crop insurance price, what are the things you're watching, and how are you talking to producers about this? Because they'll be looking at trying to manage cost on the input side, and this is one of the costs they may think about managing.
Well, in previous years, we had an opportunity where crop insurance may have been able to offer us at least some profit when we go into it. One of the problems we have going into 2016 crop is price levels we're looking at may not offer that. One thing to look at, though, with lower prices and lower volatility, premiums will probably be on the lower side. But each farmer has to look at it individually and see if they can manage it with whole farm units or have to break it out into optional units, depending upon, you know, where you farm. Certainly the guys in this part of Indiana and parts of Illinois, crop insurance was a pretty important tool to have. So I think it's something you need to have in your hip pocket. Different products are most important to different farmers. They have to look at each farm and see, you know, what fits in best for them.
And as a follow-up on this conversation, Gary Schnitke, ag economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, is of the opinion that producers, at least at this point, probably should not consider lowering coverage level as a way to save cost in the coming season, that because he believes the risk is greater than the benefit. Philip Shaw, what kind of help do you get from the government in Canada?
Well, I'm very familiar and I have appreciation for your crop insurance program and ARC. Also, too, I realize when you set your crop insurance levels in February, how important that is for producers in their marketing plan going ahead. In Canada, we do not have that. We don't have any type of we have a crop insurance program, but it guarantees production at a certain at a certain level over a long period of time, and we pay premiums into that, but it has no revenue component. And any type of revenue component in Canada is, we have a provincial one in Ontario, but it's not funded properly from the federal government, so we don't have anything like that, and it doesn't really affect production like it may in the United States. One question I would pose about the February crop insurance thing in the United States is that's where coverage levels are set. And I would assume that, that's very important for producers in the United States. And one thing I might ask is that going ahead, if we do get some little bit of a rally in February when these production level or these revenue levels are set, and corn gets a little bit rally going, would that reduce the number of soybeans that you might see in the United States this year being planted?
If it's over $4, if that price could get over $4.
That's a magic number.
I think it is.
Okay.
I think there's a crunch out here of a cache of, you know, budgets. When you look at putting out a corn crop, it's still significant money. Beans don't take a lot of money to put out, and I think you have to look at different parts of the country. When we were out in the western states, obviously, you know, their corn yields aren't as good as us back in the eastern corn belt, so maybe their bean yields are a lot closer. So I think budgets are going to come into play here as far as trying to pull the bean acres down. I think that's going to be difficult. Unless you get a higher price than what Pete was talking about. I just don't think guys are going to look at crop insurance as the ultimate answer of what they're going to plant.
Yeah, so there were, what, about 2.85 or 6 million acres that were missing out of the winter wheat crop seedings in January. Most of those out west, Nebraska had the lowest number.
Nebraska.
Yeah, had the lowest number of wheat seedings they've had. And of course, they would have that'd be dry land, I suppose. So, do you think that that'll go into what crop there?
Well, we were in Nebraska and did some meetings in South Dakota, and that was about the time the report came out. And we've got those guys out there hooked on corn and soybeans. So I think it's probably going to be soybeans. The South Dakota farmers are the same way. I mean, they're have gone over to corn and beans, and wheat is not attractive to them out there. So those acres, unfortunately, we believe will be, you know, probably headed more towards the bean side than on the corn in the dryland areas.
It'll be something to follow. Anybody else have something they want to ask, or shall we go on to our final word for the day?
I think that what we have to have is like a production calamity somewhere, and we don't want it, of course, here. So, you know, we need some fresh news for those futures prices.
Yeah, I want the calamity somewhere else, not where I'm at. That's what everybody does. But I think the not farming ground, the idea that people aren't going to farm ground is wrong. There will be some of that. But if you look at the acres aren't planted, it has more to do with weather and can we get in to plant it. It doesn't have to do with this ground isn't as productive, so I'm going to let it lie this year. It just doesn't happen in the Midwest.
And the calamity has happened. It's in South Africa, but it didn't have much of an impact on the rest of the planet, I suppose, although they're importing corn from Brazil at this point. Let's get a final word from each of you. We'll start with you, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities.
Well, I hope I'm not on top of the island again. I don't really like being in that position, as Philip points out. But as producers, we're going to plant a crop. I think in our mind here at Risk Management, we're playing defense as we look forward to next year. That's our stand, and wait for something to change. And if there's changes yet to come out there, everything has a cycle. We were at the high for a while, and now we're probably in the lower end or the bottom cycle. Let's see if we can manage that the best we can and survive and go forward.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
I think you have to be flexible and ready to move. I think you need to be able to look at selling out of the money options to add a dime, a 12 of 20 cents to the price you're selling grain for.
And Philip Shaw from Under the Agrodome out of Dresden, Ontario, Canada.
It's hard not to be bearish in this scenario with the good crops we have in Brazil. And the ethanol thing in the United States is flattening out or even decreasing with the price of ethanol the way it is. But you know the drill. We're going to go into March and have the plantings report, and then weather takes over for planting, and there might be some rallies we might see there. Of course, up here, it's all about the value of the Canadian dollar and how that's going to go too.
Philip Shaw's from Under the Agrodome in Dresden, Ontario, Canada. He was joined by Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities of Normal, Illinois, on this January 28th edition of Commodity Week. You can always hear all of our programming online anytime you'd like on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.